You're listening to the More Time, More Profit podcast, the best place for entrepreneurs who are looking to grow past the startup phase of their business, but still need to learn how to free up more time to drive more profit. Now, to present these real strategies, your successful business coaches and hosts, Adam John and Grant Muriel.
Welcome to More Time, More Profit, episode number 69. Today's show, we're talking about the simplified management approach for remote and local teams with Pilar Orti. My name is Adam John, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Grant Merrill. What's going on, Grant?
Not much, buddy. Everyone listening to this podcast has had to manage someone before in their life, whether it's an outsourcer, a local employee, a virtual assistant, etc. You set yourself up for failure if you do not know how to manage them. Just go and do yourself a favor. Download the framework that we're going to be running through in this episode by going to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/069 for episode 69.
So today we're concentrating on a management for local and remote teams. We went through outsourcing back in episode number 2 and number 31, so go ahead and put those on your playlist as they might complement this show nicely. Now the fact of the matter is that with the popularity of the internet, you and your staff are just not limited to one office anymore. You might want to work from your holiday house. You might want to have a virtual team in the Philippines. You might want your staff to work from home to save on office costs. Or you might have multiple locations and can't be everywhere at once. Whatever the reason is, working remotely is massively popular. Now, before we get carried away thinking about how we can work remotely from our jacuzzi, it's not all sunshine and lollipops. There are many considerations to be made. How do you communicate with your staff if you're not in the same room as them? How do you go about keeping an eye on them? How do you monitor them for quality? How do you make sure your staff don't feel alienated and are still part of the team? How do you train people without showing them in person? Now, these are all very valid questions and some we hope to touch on in today's show. Now, Grant, you and I are in a different country every other week, it seems, and I can't tell you how many staff or contractors I've hired over the years who I've never even met in person, both onshore and offshore. Now, over the last 17 years, I've worked only in an office for 3 of those years. I love working from home in hotels, and if it suits the position and it makes sense, I'm happy for our staff to do the same. But it requires a massive amount of discipline, and you really need to shift the way you think about your management, as you just can't walk around the office and start chatting to people. I smell a nice framework coming on, Grant. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, mate, look, I couldn't agree more. In my honest opinion, working with teams is probably the hardest part about running a business. But to the other extent, it's also the most rewarding. This is primarily because there is an extremely fine line between a worker or even a team who are completely competent with their role and highly motivated and engaged with it, compared to one who is not competent at all and actually demotivates those around them. Everyone listening to this podcast must be nodding with agreement and saying that they have seen that bad style of employee. And look, no matter where you are in the world, if you're running a business, you have to know things that involve, like, how do I engage my employees? How do I evoke their passion through their work? How do I manage their expectations while ensuring that their performance is up to scratch without wasting my time? How do I understand the seesaw between pressure that will cause burnout compared to pressure that drives a significant output? As well as how do I build growth for them as an individual, but also as an employee, etc., etc.? Honestly, the list goes on and on again. And I swear to you, you need to listen to it again. If you've heard anything through what I've just shared and said to yourself, yep, I'm definitely not doing any of that for my team or even my single employee, then you're in the right place. You're on the right channel and listen to the exact podcast that will resolve this within the next 30 minutes. Personally, I've managed through different formats over the last decade to provide outputs and created teams who have just sat there and followed checklists and processes. I've had them who have been thought leaders and just pure thought leaders and who thought they actually needed no guidance at all, when in actual fact, they probably needed the most guidance. I've had teams and still have teams who both work remotely and locally. And I've had teams who are absolutely loathed me. And I've also had teams who loved everything I stood for. And you know what? The only thing that's changed across those years where I've gone from really bad situations and teams to really good is the way that I've thought. They still do the same amount of hours. They still provide high level output and they still get paid roughly the same amount. And so there was no crazy course I went in. There was no magic potion that I put in to my system. There was no huge failures that cost me millions of dollars. All I did was absorb information like we're going to go through on this podcast right now. And that was it. So now if you're extremely serious about your business, you're in the right place. So let's jump straight into it. So today we've got Pilar Orti. Welcome to the show, Pilar.
Hello, really lovely to be here. I've already learned loads, so maybe I can just go home. And
Now we like to set the scene here. So look, Pilari, you're a director of Virtual Not Distant, where the focus is on helping managers and leaders focus on their remote teams. You're also the host over at the 21st Century Work Life podcast. And with a laundry list of credentials, you're also a voiceover artist. And so for those of you who love the Wii Fit, you're actually on the Spanish version doing the Spanish girl, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. So when Adam and I were looking at sort of the next topics that our audience is sort of screaming out for, we sort of reached around our sort of network and lent on Pilar because of your knowledge and experience around large teams, but also the psychology that supports the way that management should be going around leading their teams. But in actual fact, you've actually got a framework that helps manage teams with a super simplistic approach, which I absolutely loved. So it's an absolute pleasure having you on. Now, to get started into the episode, how did you really begin or get pulled in or sort of forced into this concept around a simplistic approach to managing different areas of a business?
The main reason why I came up with the framework was because there's a lot of people who want very specific advice from people who don't know their specific context. So if I want to learn how to manage a team, I can't go and ask someone who doesn't understand my context, who doesn't understand my team, who doesn't understand my network, and ask them for tips or specific tactics. And I thought, but sometimes all we need is to get this huge subject of leading a team or working with my team and break it down into sections so that we can think through it a little bit more slowly, with a little bit more focus, and come up with our own solutions. Because I believe that we know as team leaders or even managers, we know what sits right with our team. And sometimes we just need the mental space and the focus to come up with how to solve them. Of course, we ask for advice. Of course, there are tips and tactics that can help us in a specific situation. But I really wanted to come up with something that would frame the conversation.
If you're looking back at when you went and created the framework, was there like an aha moment where you actually sat there and said, you know what I've been doing for 5, 10, 15, 20 years is wrong. And there is this, I know there is this acronym that I've been working towards or a framework that is going to work, be perfect to this. Was there that kind of moment that you went through?
It's going to be very disappointing. I can share the moment.
I'm okay with disappointment.
I was creating an online course, a very much top-down online course where you sign up, you get your information in videos and PDFs, and then there would be some coaching sessions. And I thought, well, how am I going to divide this? How am I going to divide this huge topic? I thought, oh, what about hanging it from the word virtual? V, okay, so V for visibility. We'll go through it afterwards. Okay, that's nice. That's like 6 modules because I put 2 letters together. And oh, that'll be nice. Then 1 for introduction, 1 at the... Okay, that's good. And I went to see someone at the ILM, which is the Institute for Leadership and Management, who were endorsing the course at the time. And I explained, he said, Pilar, you've got a model. You have a model there. I thought, oh, okay, let's do that. Let's turn this into a framework. This is the framework I'm going to use. And it just means that I can talk very broadly, because I like to talk broadly about these kind of subjects, but also people can then be specific and ask specific questions about it. So yeah, that's it. It's a little bit of a non-story, I think, that one.
No, look, I love it. I guess the way that I would wrap it up is, do you reckon everyone listening to this podcast, when we run through the framework, they're going to be able to implement it in their business literally tomorrow? It's that easy to apply?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a framework that you can apply. I think it's a framework that you can start thinking about, because it doesn't give you, it doesn't say you're going to do this. It says you might want to think about this. You might want to think about this. How is this happening in your team? How would you like it to happen? I think these are the kind of questions that people listening to us as we go through the framework. I think the idea is this happening in my team? How is it happening? And is this the way I want it to be happening?
Yeah, I love that. Look, let's jump straight into the episode.
And if you want to ask Pilar or ask any questions, jump onto Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit group and ask away. All right, Pilar, today we're talking about the simplified management approach for remote and local teams. So what is that framework, the processes, the steps, that virtual word that we're going to break down into the actual framework? Let's actually start going through it. And you talked about V, so we might as well start on there.
So V is for visibility. And when we're talking about visibility in a remote team, but also now co-located teams, people who are working together in the same office, we also have some problems of visibility sometimes. So we can apply like the whole of the model. It's so broad that you can apply it to any team. So visibility of the people, and that means, where are they? Are they available to you? Can you tap them on the shoulder and ask them something virtually? So for example, we might be working with someone who doesn't like working in the mornings, and so they work in the afternoons, or they might be across a different time zone. So, but we need to know as managers and as team members whether we can ask them a quick question, or whether we can ask them to jump on a call with us to help us solve a problem. That needs to be visible and deliberate, because we're not at our chair. But also more important, I think, is visibility of the work. It's, what are we getting on with today? What questions are we having? What problems are we coming across? What insights do we have? What conversations are we having with clients that might be of interest to other people on the team? So it's really about that. And there's a concept called working out loud, which John Stepper has made popular. He's got a book, Working Out Loud, which is all about this. It's about being very deliberate about sharing your process. And a company that does this very well is Automattic, who are behind WordPress. They're encouraged to write long blog posts talking about some of the work they're doing, some of their thoughts, and then share it throughout, get comments, and continue that conversation in that way.
I absolutely love that framework and that approach of visibility. So there's really two parts to it, is there, which is the visibility of people and the ability to interact with them very quickly. But then there's also the visibility of the work, which is, to your point, like doing it and communicating sort of what you're planning on doing it, getting other people's feedback. Is there anything else that we should be bringing into that visibility realm?
No, I think people and the work. Is there anything else that you were thinking about?
Is that just simply having someone available on Skype all the time, or knowing the hours in the day that you can actually contact that people, what hours are blocked out, and then which ones they're in meetings, and making sure the calendars align, and you know, all these different types of things, just knowing when people are accessible? Because I'm sure you don't want people that you can annoy all the time. There's got to be times blocked out where you don't want to be annoyed when you're on Skype. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So there is that. There is the fact, there is the, am I available to someone else now? Is that when I'm available? There's also, what am I working on? Because if you are expecting me to work on something so that you can finish your own piece of work, but I haven't told you that actually it's Wednesday that I'm going to be working on it, then you're going to be waiting. You're going to be sending me emails asking me questions about it, or you might just be waiting for me to get in touch. So it's, where are we and how available are we? But also, how have we planned our work? And this will vary. Some teams might have daily conversations and they are completely aligned. Especially when you're working with freelancers, you really need to know what different people are working on. There's also the point of connection. And I think that's quite important. Sometimes just knowing that somebody is online at the same time as us can help with the connection between team members. And I'm part of an online community called Virtual Team Talk, and we use a tool called Sococo, which is like a 2D office. It's an office plan, and you put your avatar there. And it just means you're there and you're working for that team at the moment. And you can change the name of the room you're in. And then you can switch on your webcam and just say hello, or switch on your microphone and ask a quick question, or use the chat. So there's different levels, but I think the visibility also helps with connection.
Yeah, that's cool. It's going to be super cool in a couple of years when everyone's doing virtual reality and everyone's sitting in the same boardroom in their boxer shorts at home. It's going to be pretty cool. What about the second step there?
So identity. So the I is for identity, and I'm talking about team identity here. And this is the time when we need to look at how people are different and then define how we want to work as a team. So especially if you're working with people you don't know very well, sometimes we make a lot of assumptions about how people are different, but also about how people are the same. And I find this quite interesting, because you always hear of looking at diversity and differences where you're working across cultures. But for me, the danger is that when we work with people who are brought up in the same country as us, or who live around the corner, that we assume they're like us in every way, just because we were brought up in the same place. So this is about understanding how people are different. And we go back a little bit to visibility. We look at how do they like to work? Simple things like, do they like to do big chunks of work? Do they mind being interrupted? Do they like to spend 3 hours working on something and then 2 hours in meetings? Or do they just dip in and out of their work? What are their communication preferences? Do they hate email? So do we want to then go into a collaboration platform? All the way to what their values are, what is important to them. Do they want to have a really hard stop at 5 o'clock, say, for example, of their afternoon and then not work at all? Or do they dip in and out of the work and that's important to them? So it's understanding how people are different so that then we can create some kind of agreement, some kind of team charter to discuss these differences and agree how we're going to operate as a team.
Does it get to a point where too many different people want too many different things and it actually starts hindering the business's way for it to actually operate? Such as like a support team doesn't want to work 9 to 5, but you have to provide an SLA to a client that's 9 to 5. And everyone sits there and says, well, I just don't want to be interrupted. I just want to work in big chunks.
Well, we have to look at the work. At the center of everything is what does the work require? And if the work requires that there is support from 9 to 5, then you have to have that. And then you recruit with someone and you have to make sure that they know that they have to be at those hours. So I'm talking about differences and differences of approach, but within the remit of the work.
We're not talking about the prisoners running the jail.
No, and this is very important. I think it's a very important question because one of the changes in mindset that I think is very important when we go from the kind of management you were talking about right at the beginning of we see stuff, we really see the work, we see the people, and we like that sense of control that we know what's going on. The change of mindset when we go virtual is really important, that we have to let go of that. But that doesn't mean that the autonomy that people have within the work, that means that everyone can do what they want. And I think this is really important because sometimes this is misunderstood. And it's finding that autonomy within what the work requires. But also that's why to have conversations where we agree how we're going to operate is really important, because within these differences, there's also different interpretations. And if we don't check in with what certain things mean, then we get all these different approaches. Does that make sense?
And I would say if you're getting a lot of problems in this area, go back and look at your recruiting and the type of people.
Yes.
And the type of culture that you're building to make sure that everyone's not working a different set of hours and things like that. What's the next step?
So the next one is results. R for results. And this is, of course, about exactly what we're talking about, which is what are we set up to do and are we doing it? Are we achieving it? And this really, really depends on your business, because there might be some businesses where it's very easy to see results because we've got very specific goals that we need to hit, that individuals need to hit. And then it's a question of finding systems online that everyone can see, because again, it's part of that visibility. If only the manager has access to certain systems, to certain information, that starts to create a difference in how we view the work and how we view working with each other. Whereas if our results are visible to everyone, then there is that team accountability, which is really what I think you want, rather than feeling that everyone is accountable only to you. You want to start generating a feeling of accountability to each other. But within those results, there is generating a culture of feedback. So as difficult as it is sometimes to just sticking to regularly catching up informally or formally as a team, if you can, sometimes it's not possible, synchronously, or at least as a one-to-one, or having even sections if you have a collaboration platform like Slack or Microsoft Teams, where you can have a channel where people either give each other feedback or give feedback about how the team is operating, but really trying to get that culture so that we learn how to talk about stuff that's not going well also, which is really important. And then, of course, if you are having meetings, the meetings are key for this. And also within these results, I think generating a culture of feedback, there's also asking for feedback on how you are doing, because sometimes if we don't ask, nobody is going to tell us. And sometimes we have to ask a few times, because part of these results is our own results as a manager.
Yeah, I think a couple of words that come to mind when you talk about results in your answer to that one is KPIs and probably dashboards as well.
Yes, so if you can have that, and then there's also making your work visible before you get those results too. And that is from the point of view of, I think as managers, sometimes it's very difficult to know that people are doing the work when they haven't quite finished.
Right. You just don't go from 0% to 100%
yes,
to get off. You show
exactly.
10%, 15%, 20%
exactly.
and so on, so everyone can see
exactly.
where you're at.
Yeah, exactly. Fantastic. Yeah.
The next step.
Yeah. Trust. So the D is for trust.
Straight after results.
Yes. Yes. So
I trust you will get results.
Yes, we trust.
Exactly right.
And that is really important because if we're not, it's really interesting that you mentioned it comes straight after results, because if we don't, if our results start to go down, or if we see that the team is not achieving those results, the trust will go down with it. So they're really interconnected. The fact that we trust each other doesn't mean we're going to get results, but having good results might just increase the trust. And this is all about understanding our own propensity to trust. So how much do we trust other people just by default? So I have a very high propensity of trust, and I have to be careful with that, because I will trust, let go, and sometimes I go, I shouldn't have trusted that person so much. And then there's the other way around, is the fact that we as a person don't trust people until we know them very well. And that sometimes can get in the way. So understanding our own version of trust, being someone that can be trusted also as a manager, really reading any messages that are coming through, really answering people's questions, which, you know, this is so basic, but I'm just coming across some of this stuff myself at the moment. So it's really on my mind. And etc. I'd like to recommend a book, which I'm really enjoying at the moment.
Definitely.
It's called, Where in the World is My Team?
Who wrote the book?
Oh, Terence Brake. And it's the first book I've seen with a dissection of trust that has like 20 or 25 elements to it. Because usually it's like trust equals this and this and this. And actually it's so complicated. So if anyone's interested, and it's a really fun book, I am really, it was written about 10 years ago, but it's exactly what you're talking about. It's stuff that's going to last, and it's really funny. So yeah, so that's trust and different ways of building trust. Well, it really depends on the team. Some people really want to know the people personally to feel like they trust them, to feel like they know them, to feel comfortable. Other people just want to talk about the work. So we want to have lots of work conversations. And here is where the manager has to understand that we need to develop different kind of relationships with different team members. We need to provide opportunities for different team members to know each other in different ways. It's almost, again, going back to that diversity.
So let's say we've got Simon. Simon lives in Sydney, Australia, and Cindy lives in the Philippines, and mm-hmm. they're in the same Slack channel together, or they have Skype or project management. What's something they can do or something you can facilitate to build that level of trust from within your culture?
So one of the things is to encourage time that doesn't have a very specific focus. So what tends to happen is that our conversations tend to be very much about the now, for example. So I might talk to you when I have something to ask from you, or when I have something specific that I need from you as a team member or as a manager. And finding times when the conversation can just go a little bit broader. So it could either be that we have in a Slack workspace that we have different channels. So for example, you can have a channel for sharing interesting articles or sharing interesting videos. And role model, especially if you're introducing this, role model what those conversations could be like, which is making yourself a little bit more vulnerable, because that's part of trusting someone is seeing that, is feeling that vulnerability. So expressing why we like certain things, expressing why we're uncomfortable in certain situations. So it's, I think as a manager, it's more a role modeling aspect to it, but you can be role modeling this in the smallest of ways, like how you react to something that somebody has posted and how much you reveal of yourself. And it doesn't mean bringing all your personal life into it.
No, just showing the human side of things to emote and connect with other people makes perfect sense to me. What's the next step?
Upgrowth, which is all about learning. And it's a terrible word, but I couldn't find another word for you. and it is about, if we are not together all the time, et cetera, it's more difficult to learn and grow as a team and as individuals. And so it's the upgrowth is all about looking after how the team can improve and how people can get better at their jobs or as professionals. So in the upgrowth, what we might be looking at is, are there ways of slightly adapting how the work is done so that people can explore a new skill, if that's what they're interested in, or in, is there more work that can go to a certain person that is obviously keen on learning something about an area of the business. There's also, if you can connect people with people outside your team because you think they're going to have an experience that is going to help them grow, that's also part of upgrowth. Because I think depending on the situation, sometimes the manager is the link between the team and the outside world. And sometimes we want to do that. We want to get our team exposed to things outside the world, which will make them grow more as professionals. And within that is also how the team can learn together. So very, I don't know, you can have, for example, latte and learn sessions if you're in the synchronous time where somebody just brings something that they've learned that week, work related or not, again, depends on the team. And they tell you a bit about it and the rest of the team asks questions. Or you can have a bring your own book club, which is something we have in virtual team talk, where you just share what you're reading and what you're learning from it, etc. So it can be as formal or as informal as you want.
Fantastic.
I love it.
Let's jump into A.
A is appreciation, which is very much linked with upgrowth. And it's about just remembering to say thank you, which if we are all the time, especially if we're not seeing each other synchronously on camera or even in person, it's sometimes we forget because everything is so focused in the written form that we forget sometimes. And sometimes, one, we need to say thank you, and then it's finding different ways of saying thank you. So it can be as imaginative as you want. Or also, for me, saying thank you is also some of what I was talking about with upgrowth, is giving someone a bit more work or giving someone a different kind of work, or even asking them if there's anything else they would like to be doing in the company. Again, this depends. Sometimes this is not possible, in which case we just thank them. And especially if the work is quite repetitive and if there is no space to grow within the work itself, then I think just remembering every now and then to say to someone, you know, your work is consistently good. Thank you very much. Let's, you know, I don't know, send them a pizza, whatever. Some companies do that. They send pizzas.
Right. Yeah. Someone who's just doing data entry all day, it might seem a little bit mundane, but, you know, appreciation just means the world to them, and it means they're going to stick around. They're going to do a great job. And ultimately, if everyone shares that cultural benefit, then, you know, the company benefits from it as well with profits.
Yeah.
Yeah, we sent pizzas to our Vietnamese team three weeks ago.
Excellent, excellent. And some companies, depending on how techie the team is as well, there's a company called convert.com, which I know someone who works there. They have a bragging channel, which is where people can say something they've done that they're proud of. And just having that space is also a form of appreciation, because we're saying, look, we're proud of what you do and we want you to tell us what you're proud of. Things like that, which are not that obvious, I think are really important. Or you can have, I think they have an application called Tacos or something like this, where you can send a taco to someone who you've seen has done a really good job. So, but this is part of our team identity.
I love it. Appreciate what Taco is. That's fantastic. Yeah. And the final step there before we bring this puppy home.
So the last one is leadership, which is not just about your own role as manager, which has all these different roles within it. I mean, you've got the role of advocate for your team with the outside world. You have the role of facilitator to broker those relationships in the team if it's needed. You have the role of coordinator. I mean, you have all these roles. So it's really about understanding what your role is in the team, what your team needs from you. So it's always very clear what we need from the team, but sometimes we forget to ask or to look to see what the team needs from you. It's about leadership in the virtual space. It's about creating that ecosystem. So making sure that we're all the time looking out for these things. Have we got something that shows appreciation? Are we learning? What's the trust like? What am I seeing? Do we need to go back to our team charter? Because I'm noticing some disconnect in how we're communicating. Everyone's a bit ah. And it's also about making room for your team members to show some leadership skills. What I mean by that is that, for example, when somebody sees something that needs fixing in the team process, that they can flag it up and that can do something about it. And this is something we often forget. It's not about us always having to improve the team, but if we can make room for people to do that. And the only thing that I can say, regardless of of the team setup, that can help with that is a coaching approach. So it's to stop thinking about the fact that as soon as we see a problem, we solve it as managers or as business owners. It's actually, okay, can someone else solve this instead? Can the person who's flagged the problem, if I ask him two questions, will they solve it themselves? And that is really difficult. It's something that if anyone listening has any thoughts about or knows anything about, it's an area I'm looking at, which is coaching asynchronously, which is how do we develop coaching skills when we're mainly writing to our team members. So all that stuff, your own role as leader, but also just making sure that people have the room to take the initiative when they see something they can improve.
Yeah, I think just to add to that leadership point, one thing that I implemented in my business is probably sort of 5-6 years ago, and I probably let 30% of them slide, but I actually made every single team member, irrelevant if they were local or remote, come to me. If they had a question, they'd have to come to me with the question, the possible three answers that they think the answer could be, but also with the three answers, they had to choose one with a reason as to why they thought it was the most appropriate. And it really helped me to understand how their brain was thinking through a problem. I got to ask myself, why are they thinking about that solution if it was wrong? Because it means that they were taught incorrectly, it was a contradictory or something like that. But it also allowed me to coach them through why it might not have been the right solution. Or if it was the right one, it was just an easy thought process, is perfect, just go on and do that exact thing. It helped save me a truckload of time, but it also helped empower the team to sort of trust in their own better judgment as opposed to lean on me and give me their monkeys and I'm the problem solver.
Yeah, and that takes a lot of guts from you, because you're saying, okay, somebody actually can have a better answer than I could ever come up with, but also it's that takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it definitely does.
And with someone, if someone comes to you with that, and then you give them all that time in whatever way, whether it's having a conversation with them or reading their written communication, maybe could be for trust and time then. It will take longer.
Definitely.
Fantastic. Now, Grant, I know you've been scribbling away on your notepad there friendly. Do you have the points or the framework? I think I know what it is, but you would just want to spell it out again for those people playing along at home so they can come into the office tomorrow and start communicating and building a better culture with their remote teams and putting that leadership in place so everyone gets a win.
Mate, I should jump on and do the cheerleader part. V-I-T-U-A-L. So we've got number one, which is visibility, right? So we've got visibility of people. So can you quickly ask them questions? Can you jump on a call with them? Are they easily accessible? But also the visibility of their work. And I love this. I do toolbox every single day with every single team member. What are we working on? What communication are you doing today? What are your biggest problems? What are the biggest roadblocks that you have caused or other people have caused? You can use tools such as Sococo.com. You can also look at reading a book by John Stepper, which is Working Out Loud. We've also then got number two, which is identity. So this is the team identity. So we know that people are different. It's obvious, but we now need to know how they work and how they work differently. Do they focus in big blocks and sort of pump out a heap of work, or do they like being interrupted and sort of chop and change? And it's not so much that we want to adapt their workplace exactly for how they work. It's more to understand it, because then we can understand why they're going for so many sort of coffee breaks or why they're thinking this way, etc. And we can either sort of incorporate that with a team. So I know a lot of sales guys love just jumping on the phones and being really high and sort of high on caffeine, I mean, and they don't really like a lot of collaboration. So we can sort of work that into our organization. Number three is the results. So what are we actually setting ourselves up to do? What are we trying to achieve? But not only that, how are we giving our team the visibility of those results? How are we giving them that feedback around SLAs, KPIs, operations? But I think, Pillar, you raised a really good point, which was around projects. So how are they giving us back a status update on something that we might not see rewards for 6 months? So is it just a status every week, or how do we get that? And it really creates this culture of immediate feedback, whether it's up on a TV, mentioning it in a weekly update or in toolboxes every day or anything like that, to ensure that we can provide guidance to the team, but that they have a measure of success for themselves as opposed to be losing themselves in the minutia. Number four is trust. So does the team trust us? Do we trust the team? Do we even understand why we have these perceptions around team members that we don't trust? And it's a huge topic, trust. And I think you referenced a really good book, which was Where in the World Is My Team by Terence Brake. So we can build this trust a whole heap of different ways, but you just need to know that it has to be very specific upon the individual. You have to be empathetic to some people. You have to be strong-willed to other people. You have to be sarcastic to some, motivational and guiding to others. You really need to know outside of yourself how to work with other people. And a really good activity that you also mentioned there, Pilar, was to build trust, encourage these conversations that are more than just work. So allow yourself to become vulnerable. And we used to do every week, we used to do a Gratitude Fridays where everyone was around and we had people constantly crying and things like that. And it was just fantastic to sort of see everyone vulnerable. Step number 5 is upgrowth. So it's difficult to learn when everyone is not all together. So how can we adapt that in the workplace? And I really think that a good part that I'm trying to bring into the business, which is the lowest level people are talking to executives so they can ask questions like, how did you get in your position? What do you do on a day-to-day basis? And they really understand that there's no actual difference between the people. But you also need to find these ways to learn together. So whether that is every Friday, everyone shares a book they're reading, etc. Second last step, which is number 6, appreciation. Remember to always say thank you, whether it's a gift publicly, one-on-one, verbally, giving a taco in a Slack chat, it doesn't really matter. Be appreciative, both for your own life, but also for your team and the business. And the 7th step is leadership. So you are there to be the coordinator, the facilitator, the educator, the problem solver, everything. But you need to understand that you're just leaning on the team as much as they're leaning on yourself. So constantly review yourself as well as the team and always sort of try and coach them to their own outcomes, coach them to their own solutions. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the virtual framework. How did I go, Pilar?
I am so impressed.
my hand went numb at 20 minutes.
How could you listen, be part of the conversation and take all those notes? I am very impressed. I hope this doesn't set a precedent for how everyone needs to be interviewing guests.
Oh, that's the A from the appreciation in the framework. How good is that? It's been awesome having you on the show today. We really appreciate your insights. Can you tell us where we can go to find out a little bit more about you, website, social media, or something that you wish to promote?
Yes, virtualnotdistant.com is the website where you can find everything about what I do. And there's a blog, and there's also the 21st Century Work Life podcast. If you're interested in how the world of work and our attitudes to work are changing, Management Cafe is another small podcast, and then Pilar Orti on Twitter.
Fantastic. And we'll put those in the show notes for everyone playing along at home. We'll be continuing this conversation over at Facebook. You can go to Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit group and join in the conversation with us there.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Don't forget to jump onto iTunes, click subscribe, and actually leave us a review of exactly what you've taken away from today's episode with Pilar.
And that's it from us. We'll catch you the same bat time, the same bat channel next week. It's bye for now.
Catch you later, everybody.
You've just been listening to More Time, More Profit podcast. For more info, check out moretimemoreprofit.com. Make sure to tune in at the same time next week for another dose of real-life business strategies.